If you're trying to figure out how to navigate the tricky tightrope of parenting while you have questions, doubts, and wonderings about your spiritual journey, our podcast is for you.
It doesn't matter if your kids are smalls, middles, or bigs. We'll explore what and how we're deconstructing from churchianity, harmful belief systems, and diving deep into the ways we can work this out in parenthood.
We're also going to work through ideas for reconstructing a space for our families to thrive under new systems of love and freedom.
We can't wait to bring you some hope that you're not alone and that it's really okay, even good, to explore all the possibilities that may have felt closed off in the past.
Our podcast is going to offer you grace and space to be exactly where you are and who you are.
We're really glad you're here, and we're excited for today's episode. Listen in.
We are meaning-making machines. Chaos is uncomfortable, and thinking that everything that happens to us is due to random chance feels cold and impersonal. The brain seeks out patterns and order when they are not necessarily present. Sarah Henn Hayward.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Deconstructing Mamas podcast. We're here with Sarah Henn Hayward today. She's a mom, author, physical therapist, and she recently wrote a book called Giving Up God. And we're excited to talk to her today about her faith journey and what that's looked like. So thank you, Sarah, for being willing to be on today.
Yes. Hi, I'm excited to be here.
Before we get into some of the nitty-gritty stuff and some of those bigger questions that we have, can you tell us what your day looks like, what your family looks like, and then outside of all of this, you know, faith stuff, writing stuff, physical therapy, those things that you do on the day-to-day, what makes your heart come alive?
Yeah, so my days, I am a physical therapist, as you mentioned, and I work at an assisted living facility. Oh. So my patients are primarily in their 90s. I have a patient who's 103. So I'm working with folks who are kind of approaching the end of their story. And that's been a newer situation for me. I've been there for the last 2 years. The pandemic kind of shuffled my career around quite a bit. I really love working there, and I do that part-time. And then I have 2 kids, 5 and 7. So the youngest 5-year-old is now at least in preschool 5 days a week. So I get a little window of time, which is right now, to do stuff like this when nobody's home. So that's nice on my days off. And my oldest is in first grade, and they're just at that, for me, super fun age now of they're getting a little bit more independent. Their personalities are really shining and coming out. And so I've been having a lot of fun with them and that. And then I'm married. I've been married for 11 years, and my husband is an attorney, and we live in Spokane, Washington, all of us. And yeah, that's kind of my day-to-day life. And then what makes my heart come alive, for me lately, it has been dance parties in the kitchen. The kids are really into music, and we like to put on their songs in the morning, getting ready for school or at night, and watching them dance and seeing their skills grow. You know, they have moves now, and like seeing their personalities come out that way, it's just so fun. And I like music, and I used to listen to music all the time. And for whatever reason, my husband's not a huge music guy, and so we just didn't have it on in the house a lot. And lately we've been playing a lot more songs and having a lot of fun with that. So that's been very energizing.
I love that. That's so regulating too. I didn't ever really realize before how regulating dancing was. And then like you said, when your kids start doing it, you're like, okay, I guess I'll dance. And then it's there's something so great about it.
It's fun. Bonding.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, we do a lot of that.
What's the favorite song? Is there a favorite song that you guys do every day?
Currently, we're all obsessed with, well, pretty much anything Lin-Manuel Miranda writes. So it's Vivo right now.
Oh, yeah.
From the movie.
That's a good one.
There's some cute ones in there.
Did you guys see Trolls 3?
We have not seen any of the Trolls.
Okay.
Somehow. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Oh, my gosh. They're so good. But Trolls 3, my kids are into that. And there's like some new, there's like a new NSYNC song in that movie. And so that's been our big dance party song right now. So yeah, that's awesome. That's fun. I love that. I think it can be sometimes hard to like, when you have kids, to remind yourself to learn from them, you know what I mean? And to be able to like absorb things that they have to give us. And I think dancing is one of those things that's sometimes easy to forget about. And then when they show you, you're like, oh yeah, that's really, really, really
great. Yes. Well, and then they're so unselfconscious because they're little kids. They haven't learned to be, you know, timid or embarrassed about that. So they just move around and it's hilarious. It's really fun.
Yeah.
That's so fun. Well, Sarah, if you had to describe your faith background in a word or phrase, what would it be? And then how has it changed? And I know you've had a dramatic shift. And what word or phrase would you describe where you find yourself currently?
So one word to describe the whole big picture would definitely be fluid. My faith has been evolving and changing throughout my life. Sometimes I don't even notice that until I look backwards. I was kind of born and raised in an evangelical Christian community and was very involved in that as a kid, which has a pretty strong undertone of conservatism. So my views aligned with that for a long time. And as I got older and started making my faith my own and asking more questions, I morphed into a much more open-minded, progressive faith that was inclusive of, you know, the LGBTQ community, who I would have formerly judged, and questioning the reality of an eternal hell and kind of asking a lot of really big questions, but still very much identifying as a Christian. And so I lived there in that space for over a decade. And then eventually, as I kept studying and reading and learning about God and learning about the Bible and thinking through these big, heavy questions, I think I had never growing up allowed myself to really ask and really wonder if God was even real. That was kind of off the table. It felt like I could question a lot of the dogma and a lot of the things I had learned about the religious aspect of stuff. And I was always very able to dissociate religion from God. So the hypocrisy in the church and the, you know, sex scandals and all that stuff, that never made me question God, because I thought, well, yeah, those are humans messing up in human ways, but God is different. And once I got to the point of allowing myself to even ask, do I really think that this idea of a higher being in charge of all of this is real? For me, the answer became a shaky no. I was scared to even say it out loud for a long time, and it still feels awkward just coming out of my mouth. But I really doubt it. And I'm open. I would love, honestly, love to have my mind changed, because the idea of a loving God in charge is really comforting. I can't see it at the moment. So at this point, I would call myself an agnostic atheist, highly doubtful of the existence of a God, but not claiming to be certain or know with any level of certainty.
I can imagine there was a lot of panic that came with that. I mean, you said it was like a shaky no. And can you talk about that a little bit, about how sort of accepting the way that you were feeling or thinking about God, how that might have affected your mental health, or if, you know what I mean, or affected the way that you were relating to friends of yours who are from the evangelical church, or, you know, like how that, because I know that that's a really hard thing for a lot of us who are deconstructing, is there's a mental health aspect, there's a trauma aspect that comes from deconstructing.
Yeah. I think it was when I really got to that point and was asking those questions was in the height of the pandemic. So it was a weird twilight zone anyway, where we were all stuck at home. Nobody was leaving the house. You didn't know what day it was, what was going on. I had been laid off. So I was suddenly a full-time stay-at-home mom, which is not my jam and not what I was hoping to do. And so it was just a weird time across the board. And so, yeah, it felt very disorienting and it was intimidating. I had been a very devout believer. I had always taken my faith extremely seriously. So to potentially be throwing it all away was really scary, because my Christianity was the bedrock of my identity. It's who I was supposed to be. I wasn't supposed to be even hardly myself. I was supposed to have died to Christ, because to, you know, let Christ, I can, not messing up the verse now.
Yes, I know what you're talking about. Well, yes. Esther, you would know.
I know. For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain.
Right, to die is gain. Sure, I was supposed to have died to my will and myself. And I had tried to do that. And so thinking that maybe all of it was a little misguided or off, then made me have to have a really huge identity crisis. So it was an existential fear and terror place for a while. But ultimately, when I asked the question and landed on, you know, I really don't think so. I really don't think there's this being in charge. To me, that was actually personally comforting. I felt, as soon as I let myself say it out loud, I truly felt a palpable sense of peace that surprised me. I wasn't expecting. I thought the world would explode when I said I didn't think God was real. I really did. I thought the ground would crack apart. And I felt the most calm. The world just made more sense to me that way. I didn't have to now justify evil and suffering the way I had been. I didn't have to make excuses for God and why he isn't doing more to help people and all that kind of stuff. So it really, to me, took a lot of the religious anxiety I had had trying to make pieces fit that didn't felt like they fit. And it took that away. So on a personal level, I felt very peaceful and resolved in where I was at and comforted by this viewpoint. But then, you know, I am a human with a community. And so on the community level, my husband's a Christian. All my friends are Christians mm-hmm. because being a Christian was my whole life. And it's where I made friends, was through Campus Crusade in college and through church now and small groups. And so my entire community is still pretty much religious. And so it was very isolating. I felt like I was the only person in the world who felt this way or thought these things. I didn't have an example of someone else who had been as strong of a Christian as I considered myself and had totally decided to walk away. So that's why I wrote my book, because I felt so alone and I knew there have to be others like me out here. And I felt so adrift and lost. And writing the book was very therapeutic and helped me process a lot, especially the identity crisis piece on the second half coming away from religion. And so I needed to write it for myself. I needed that book to be able to read. And then I thought putting it out there for anyone else, to help anyone else in that boat. But yeah, it was scary and it's still tough. All of our friends, like I said, are, you know, still believers in my husband. So that has definitely been the hardest part. And it's just new territory. We're kind of figuring it all out as we go.
Yeah.
Thankfully, my friends were all in that progressive brand of Christianity. And so they're not ostracizing me. They're not going to excommunicate me. My own pastor has read the book and we've had coffee before as I was processing and since. I still go to church. So I haven't had anyone dump me over all of this or like break up with me as a person, which has been a blessing. But there is definitely kind of a little bit of an elephant in the room these days sometimes, a little awkward tension.
Yeah.
I have a weird question. I'm such a theological nerd. One of the things I picked up that you said was it kind of gave you peace about the idea of why there's so much suffering in the world. And I think mm-hmm. that's obviously the age-old question mm-hmm. of theodicy, right? If God is good mm-hmm. and there's all this suffering, how do the two mesh? Mm-hmm. And so I guess you're saying, I don't think there's a God and there's all this evil. So can you dive into us of how that mm-hmm. became a place of peace for you? How do you then, without any kind of higher power, explain evil, suffering, whatever?
Yeah. It kind of goes a little bit to the quote that you read at the beginning of thinking about the world as just being random. That can feel very cold. It can feel like, if nobody's in charge and nobody cares, you know, there's no one looking out for me. There's no one working in my best interest. To me, though, approaching it from kind of just a scientific point of view and thinking way back through evolution, it's all survival of the fittest, right? Eat or be eaten. And so if you look at other animals and think back to kind of the really early primitive human days, you can kind of see that it was tribal. It was, you know, everyone fighting for themselves. And that has evolved as our culture has evolved. And I would argue that humans aren't the only animals who have a sense of culture now, into empathy and into altruism. Those traits, you can make an argument from a scientific point of view that altruism had an evolutionary advantage at one point. It would have started off probably from a mother to her own children, looking out for them and their best interest is good for our gene pool. But as those traits evolved, they could become kind of spread out to outside of that original purpose. And we get benefits from altruism. It makes us feel good. You know, there is a payoff to some degree. And so I was able to see how the existence of good and generosity and love and care, all of that could have just evolved through our species' evolution. And as we became more advanced and didn't see that God was necessary for that to happen, that it could have happened mm-hmm. just organically through our development. And so now I'm left with a world where there is still that evil and suffering, because there is still kind of the eat or be eaten, everyone's out for themselves, greed. We still have those, you know, very old poles, but we also have the ability to be kind and good and heroic and all those things. So to me, that's just, I see it now as that's just reality. That is what it is. We all have good and evil tendencies, and we all have the capacity to act in ways that are heavenly or hellish. And, you know, it's up to us to try to lean into the heavenly side. And certainly a lot of people don't, looking at the world today and what's going on with wars and fightings and genocides. But to me, the fact that it's just the reality that good and evil exist, and not that anyone's doing it to us, not that the suffering is a punishment or a lesson. It just is what it is, because this is the way the world works, at least on our planet. That aspect of it, to me, felt comforting.
It's interesting because I actually believe similarly. I don't consider myself agnostic, mostly because of choice, right? Like, mostly because I have chosen for my own self, probably for my own benefit in some ways, to believe in Jesus, believe in God, no matter how loosely that is. But so I think it's really, it's interesting. There's something so beautiful about just like having choice. And I think that's what we didn't have when we were in high control religion, right? Like, you didn't have a choice. This is what it is. And this is what you have to believe. And now, like, what I hear you saying is just like, now you have choices. You have things that you can learn, right? And you can decide whether or not you believe it, or whether it makes sense or it doesn't make sense. And so, even though I still consider myself a Christian in some ways, I definitely feel like I have a very similar belief that, like, God actually isn't in control in the ways that we were told. And the world works in a specific way because that's how it works. Like, and obviously there's a lot of scientific backing. And when you start to go down that hole, you know, things unravel real quick. But I just find it so interesting that for all of us on this journey, sort of no matter where we are, that idea of like just being able to choose for ourselves what we believe is like so powerful. And so, even though it can be scary, right, it's so freeing and healing.
For sure.
Right. I wonder if it's more important that we have agency over what we believe than actually what we believe.
Like, oh, I love that.
You know, I don't know the answer. And even just as I was driving, I was getting my hair cut this morning and driving home, I thought, why do I still believe any of it? And I bring myself back at times. And I think you're saying, like, it is the desire, like you said, to stay on track and to make sense out of chaos. And the only thing that even remotely fits with us, and we had somebody last season that came on to talk about open and relational theology, which just says that God is not in control, and that God is not omnipotent. And that is the way that the open and relational theologians are making sense of suffering, where it's just that there is the randomness. We are just human. It is sort of random. Why did I get born into my family? Why did somebody else get born into poverty? Why was I? It is so much randomness. And yet I think, like, the way that we humans are always trying to make sense of it is there's randomness, but then there's somehow, and this is going into quantum physics and all that, there's somehow crazy connection that we just don't even understand, this kind of human connection to, not even human, but like our world is connected, nature,
like energetic,
the other human world, the more than human world, the human world, trees, all that stuff. And there's quarks. And so it's just fascinating to me that there's all these ways of viewing or trying to come up, I guess, with not a solution. Like you said, the chaos is not a solution, but trying to make sense of what are we doing here? How did we get here? I have a question now too on that. What would be your reasoning that we are supposed to be choosing moralism and virtue?
I don't know that I...
Is it just for the species to proliferate? I don't know.
Right, yeah. I don't know that I would say supposed to, because I don't know that there is anyone keeping score and that we have an ultimate report card. But I know I want to be a good human. I want to do a good job just for the sake of doing a good job. I don't need an eternal motivator to want to thrive as a person. And to me, the definition of thriving as a person is knowing that, you know, no one's free till everyone's free. My liberation is tied to everyone else's. My progress is tied to everyone else's. And so I am part of a community locally. I am part of a, you know, the human family. And I think to be a successful person myself means looking out for that whole bigger picture and that whole greater good. And beyond humanity, like you said, we are connected in ways to nature. We are nature. Like, we are animals. We're part of nature. And so there's that to me, from learning about that from the scientific point of view and looking back at this evolutionary tree, you go way, way far back to the first single-celled organism. We are distant cousins to everything that's alive. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And that can be purely atheistic point of view. You can think of it as terms of God and God's creation. And that's beautiful. And anyone who thinks that, I have no problem with that. Fine. Mm-hmm. To me, I can see how that can exist without a God who created it in the first place, that it's the byproduct of evolution and what we have here on this planet. Mm. And it's still beautiful. We're still connected. And so I am a much stronger environmentalist, even now, having realized some of those connections mm-hmm. and things that we have mm-hmm. in common and how what we do affects so many other species on the planet. And so, yeah, to your question of why bother being good, I say you don't have to. Like, you can choose to be an asshole if you want, but I don't think that's a fun way to live. Maybe it would be for a week or two.
Right. It's like your own personal hell, right?
Yeah. You're just making yourself, you know, I still think some of these, the golden rule and karma, like those are concepts that have come about because of lived experience that people have noticed and, you know, the you reap what you sow. Mm-hmm. I don't think that a lot of the lessons and truths that I got from Christianity and that are present in many religions are void because of the lack of a God. Those values I still predominantly value, you know, almost everything that I respected and learned from Jesus is still guiding how I want to be as a person, just from a different kind of motivation, maybe.
I do think it's true that, you know, we often as human beings use religion to sort of buffer the pain of the world. And so I think it makes a lot of sense what you're saying. Like, there are certain areas that maybe you couldn't get to in sort of an empathetic kind of way, right? Or even from understanding, because religion sort of like acted as that go-between, right? Like, God's got that. You don't have to worry about global warming. You don't have to, like, God's got it, right? Like, we sort of like, we just kind of glaze over because, like, God has it.
Right.
And in my own deconstruction journey, right? Like, since I stopped believing that, like, God's got it all the time, I see the world very differently. You know, I see things for what they are. I require like more of myself in relation to other people because I don't just believe that God's just like got it and he's just going to fix it, right? So I, as a person, I'm doing more, I think, for my fellow humans because I believe that we are all connected and we do need to be helping each other, right? And so I think that there's a way in which our religion can at times really blind us if we believe that things are just like all going to work out and everything happens for a reason. And, you know, I'm blessed because I do good things or, you know, whatever.
Right. Or the people suffering and living really horrible situations. Well, it'll be better for them when they die.
Right.
They'll get to go to heaven. Like,
they're in a better place.
Yeah. It is a comfort blanket. And I understand the appeal. And I think that's, you know, I was a psych major in my undergrad and there are psychological reasons why we want to force meaning onto chaos. We look for patterns, whether they exist or not. People hear voices and static. There aren't voices there. Like, our brains are so wired to try to make sense of things because that is comforting and it helps us organize our life and our behavior when we can make sense of things. But I think sometimes we're forcing it and it doesn't necessarily always make sense.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're right. Sometimes it just doesn't make sense. Sometimes there isn't a reason and it doesn't make sense. Sometimes it's just like total shit and it just is what it is. Right. And the uncomfortability of having to like accept that and sit with it, I think it's just hard and people just, they don't want to do it. They want to have a reason. They want to be able to say like, oh, well, there's something good's going to come out of this bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been finding too lately that a little bit of compassion for people on that front as well, because you're just trying to regulate themselves.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. There's all that God's in control or everything happens for a reason, because when you're in the middle of pain and you can't make any sense of it at all. And I think pain is something that causes people to question their upbringing or whatever, because their pain continues. Like, my latest thing lately is, oh, your kid's going to get through this. And I'm like, and what if they don't?
Right.
That's not necessarily true. Mm-hmm. And so to try to live in a true place, an authentic place, instead of always trying to regulate myself. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I do understand why we need so much regulation.
For sure.
Because it is a scary, scary world. Mm-hmm. I try to regulate myself all day long. And I find the little platitudes and a little quote. Oh, I'm looking at one that I wrote on my wall here. It says, I am more than enough for me, right? Mm-hmm. So when I feel like the world's going to hell in a handbasket, And who's going to be there for me? I'm like, okay, I've got myself. I'm in control. And so there's just all these little ways that you're right. As humans, it's very, very difficult for us to live in chaos. We'll be right back to the rest of today's podcast episode. But first, we want to give a shout out to some of our amazing and faithful Patreon supporters, Carol Talman, Angie French, and Frankie Brown. For just $3 a month, you can help us keep the lights on and at the same time be part of our safe and private Facebook community, where you won't feel so alone in this changing faith and parenting journey. We hope to see you there. Now, back to the episode. So I wanted to come back to you said it brought you a level of peace. That, and I'm going to go right to scripture here. A level of peace that perhaps past understanding.
Certainly surprised me.
Yeah, it was so surprising. Can you just describe a little bit more about that piece? And then have you been able to unpack why that piece came to you in the chaos?
Yeah, the analogy I use is that as I had started to really ask these harder questions and get really real and just dig deeper into the doubt, it felt like there was the cognitive dissonance I was experiencing from what I had been taught about God and what I was told was true and what I was seeing with my eyes looking around the world. Especially, again, this happened during the pandemic. So it was George Floyd and racial tension exploding around the country and millions dying from this pandemic and people not wearing masks, like seeing all of this going on. I just felt like I had static in my ears constantly. It was just this annoying buzz of something isn't right here. Something doesn't feel right to me. And so my conclusion that I have arrived at, that I am open to changing at some point, I certainly never would have thought I would have been here 15 years ago. So 15 years from now, who the hell knows what I'll believe. But when I was able to say, you know what, maybe God isn't in charge and didn't do all this because God isn't real. The second I said that out loud, or even just inward in my head, it was like the static turned off. Everything just chilled and got quiet. And it felt right when I said it. So that's the piece I had, just thinking I've been trying so hard to justify or realize how God, who is supposed to be all powerful and loving and all knowing, would make this world this way. Like, this was the best they could do. They couldn't make a world that limited our free will more than it already is limited, because free will is not absolute. I don't have the free will to just grow wings and start flying. Like, there are limitations. Why couldn't there have been no free will to commit murder and rape and genocide? If I can just quickly imagine a better way of doing this, and I'm hardly God, why did God make this world this way? And all those questions I had, and all those things, these square pegs I was trying to force into round holes, just releasing that and saying, you know what? I don't think God did, because I don't think there is a God, or at least certainly nothing close to the God I was taught growing up. If there is something, it's so different. And I'm open to that. I like this. There's this ground of being theology that I'm attracted to. There are some ways of conceptualizing, but I cannot use the word God anymore. God is so specific for me. And so giving up God, the title of the book, that idea of God, it, to me, it made the world just make more sense. And that's the piece that I had, that things just made sense.
When we make decisions that we sort of already know in the back of our minds, like, I remember being in college and like feeling like I really was like needed to break up with this boyfriend that I was with. Like, I just felt like it was over, but I didn't want to make the decision, right? And then when I finally made the decision, there was just like so much peace washed over me, because I was in line with what I already believed or I already knew to be true. And sort of sounds like that's what your experience was. Like, you sort of already felt this way. You just couldn't quite get there because it's scary, or, and it's different and it's hard. And like you said, like you still have family members and friends who are in the Christian circle. But then once you were able to admit to yourself, no, this is what's actually true for me, right? Like there was so much freedom and peace in that, because you were in alignment with your own soul.
I think I've noticed that pattern, like you said, with relationships. Anytime I feel super torn and conflicted and stressed out about a thing, I feel like usually it is because I know what needs to be done and I know the right answer. And it's the scary choice. It's, I don't want to do it. I'm terrified. But yeah, I think you're right. That's, I probably, because I would not even let my brain ask the question for so long. I think it was somewhere subconscious in the back. And once I looked it in the face and admitted what I thought.
It's hard. It was your whole life. It's really hard.
But then on that on the personal individual level, it felt right. So I felt that sense of peace.
Do you find that it would be the idea of giving up control that gives us peace? Like, I'm so curious about your word chaos. It just keeps coming up and up and up in my mind as we're discussing that when we want to be in control of whatever, God is in control, we're in control. There seems to be a lot of spinning wheels and looping around in your brain. I'm sitting here listening to you thinking, oh, well, maybe she just said, all of this is out of my control or out of control, period. Not even my control, God's control. Mm-hmm. And when you kind of let all of that control go, then there's some measure of peace, or like you said, a crazy peace came over you.
Yeah, I think there's this sort of paradoxical layeredness to that, because I do think in a big cosmic eternal sense, there's no control. I didn't get to control whether this pandemic blew up our whole planet. I don't get to control wars happening around the globe. There's so many things outside of our control. But then also, I do have control over my own life. I really do. I can choose how to react to these things. I can choose to let it get me completely down and depressed and just wallow in a dark room. And that is a viable choice that people make, and I get it. Or I can choose to try to keep seeing the positive side of things and stay optimistic and do what little bit I can to alleviate suffering and promote, you know, flourishing for the human family. And so I think the sense of having no control in one aspect, to me, actually takes the pressure off, right? Like, I don't have to be God's hands and feet. So many things are happening regardless of what I do or not. You know, prayer was nice, but people I prayed for still died or they still had the worst outcome happen, you know? So the control wasn't real, or at least it wasn't predictable. It didn't work most of the time. And so accepting that we don't have it and then embracing the control we do have in the tiny, particular, specific sense of our own lives and our own relationships. Yeah. So it's like both. And I feel like there's total chaos and no control in the big global grand scheme of things, but also that within my own life, especially outside of some of the rules of religion, like you were saying, Liz, like we weren't allowed to make some of these choices. Throwing that out the window means I have all the freedom I can think of. And so I feel like I have a greater sense of control in some ways.
It's interesting. I feel like our journeys are like have a lot of parallels, which I actually think is really, really cool. You know what I mean? That we can sort of like make these choices for ourselves and we can sort of like fit these pieces together in like the way that works for us. And there's like beauty and like and freedom in that. I just think it's really, really neat.
Sarah, it's so funny. You sound so much like my son. All of this just makes much more sense if you pull this hovering God out of the equation. And it's funny because I will go, oh my gosh, no. And I cover my ears like I don't want to hear that there's not a God or that there isn't somebody that's for me or with me. And so I guess the thing that makes a lot of sense about what you're saying to me is that random peace that we can almost rest in the randomness and not strive. Like, I don't have to worry right now about what I'm personally doing about all of the suffering in the world. And I just get to look right in front of me and love the people right in front of me and do my best right in front of me and then trust sort of this process, I guess.
Oh, that's such a good point, Esther. Like, I don't actually know if I would have ever really learned to regulate my nervous system. Not that my nervous system is regulated, but I'm working on it. But I don't think that I would actually ever have embarked on that journey if I hadn't deconstructed, because I still believed that, like, God's hand was sort of in everything and that there wasn't really anything I could do, like, outside of Christ, right? So, like, who am I to try and re-regulate my nervous system? Like, good God, that's, like, blasphemy or whatever. But so I think there are these pieces where when you start to deconstruct, like, you are more able to be, like, fully yourself, right? Which, from my perspective, is, I mean, really almost the point is, like, coming back to ourselves, right?
Yeah.
And so you're able to be more fully yourself and, like, you know, like we've been talking about a lot, even just on our Instagram, like doing your makeup, right? Like just like personal hygiene things that you thought like weren't okay. And
right, this was vanity or
Right. Just like these little things that just like make us human. We can be like more fully human and more fully connected to ourselves. And Esther and I are part of a book club, and something that we've been doing now for, I mean, like a couple of years, I guess, is that when people are having a hard time, it's like, I'm over here breathing for you. I'm breathing in and out and in and out, or I'm lighting a candle for you. That's like another big one that we do. And I really believe that like energy can shift between two human beings. I believe that like on a scientific level, and then also just like on an emotional level. Like I just believe in, you know, in human connection. And so I believe that even though I don't pray in the same sense, like I believe that we can have this connection with other people when we're thinking of them or breathing for them or whatever. And that's just like a personal belief that I have. But I think it's really cool how deconstruction allows us the room for some of these other things. And I think that's really healing. And I think it's really important. I think autonomy is really important. And we're learning that now more and more with, you know, how parenting works, right? So why isn't that true for us? And why isn't that true for us in like our own spiritual journeys as well, right? Like we need that.
Parenting ourselves as we do it.
Reparenting ourselves. Isn't it a trip? It is something else.
What's been like the hardest part for you about all of this?
The hardest part has been the relational aspect and the fallout, you know, in my community. Like I said, nobody has disowned me or excommunicated me, but you know, my husband and I got married on the basis of our shared faith. We would have each said there was no way we would have married someone who wasn't a Christian. And now he's married to someone who's not a Christian. You know, like this isn't what he signed up for. He was surprised. He's kind of hurt, you know, a little bit. He gets it because he's deconstructed quite a bit of his faith. So he's not, he doesn't believe in an eternal place of torment. So it's not like he's worried about my soul in that sense, but just, you know, it throws into question a lot of things. What does this mean? Are we on the same page now about a lot of the same stuff? And to me, I feel like I said earlier, all my values remain, and they're mostly values I got from my faith. I just have a different motivation to approach them from now. So I feel like he and I really are still, maybe we're not on the same page, but we're still in the same chapter, in the same book for sure.
Right.
But yeah, it just brings up a lot of questions, and with the kids and how are we going to raise the kids? And so it's just tension. And he and I have been very lucky to have had a very smooth marriage so far. We're highly compatible and we see most of the big things the same way politically, with money, spending, that kind of stuff. So this is just the first real big friction that we've run up against, which we're spoiled. Like a lot of people have friction throughout their marriage from day one, and we just haven't really had to deal with it to this degree yet. So we're figuring it out. And but yeah, my parents are upset. They're not excited that I wrote this book. They have also read it, and you know, we've talked about it some, and they get it. You know, they're humans. They have had doubts and had questions, and so they understand. They're in a place of leaning heavily on their faith to get them through some really hard things in their personal lives. So the idea of not having that, I think, is terrifying to them. And so I think they're scared for me that I won't have that crutch or blanket if something comes along, which I respect. I get that. You know, I was a Christian for so long, so I know what they think. And I know that I would have been freaked out if one of my dear friends jumped into the boat I'm in right now. And I would have been worried for them. And especially my parents, I think, do still believe in the classic heaven and hell. So I sure hope they're worried about my soul. I hope they aren't okay with the thought that I might be, you know, landing there. So if they weren't, I'd be more offended.
Right.
Yeah. Well, talk about your church journey too, because you said you're going to church still, right? And I'm assuming you're going like with your husband and your kids, right?
Yeah.
How has that been? I mean, I know for me, I'm not currently going to church. I can't really step foot in a church, in a church setting. That's really hard for me. So can you talk about that a little bit, like how that's felt for you and, you know, why you've chosen to continue going to church when I'm sure you could say to your husband, I'm not comfortable, you take the kid, you know what I mean? So why have you continued? I'm really curious about that.
Yeah, there's a few things. The church that we go to is, I think, a really healthy place. They have done sermon series on doubt. They're not afraid of it. They're not intimidated by questions. They have had professors from one of our local colleges, science professors, come do sermons on science. So they're not intimidated by those things. They're an open and affirming church. So that makes my heart happy that they would affirm anyone's gender or sexual identity. We have female elders, female pastors who preach on a regular basis up front. So it's the kind of place I'm okay going. I don't think they're screwing up my kids. You know, the way they're teaching us our faith is a way that I support.
Okay.
The kids' mission, kids' community kind of mission statement is, I wonder. So they're very cool. Against.
I love that so much.
Yes.
That's so beautiful.
A great place.
Yeah, that's really beautiful.
They're not black and white. They're not saying, we have figured out the answers and here it is.
I love that.
I wonder what it would have felt like when Jesus broke that bread. Did the bread feel crusty? Like getting really physical in the senses of the book, but also I wonder what that could look like or what that means, or I wonder how that happened, or, you know, just not being certain. So I feel comfortable going there intellectually and emotionally. And also, I would say, if I was just my own person, not married and in a family, I don't know that I would still go to church. Or I would certainly probably, I am still very curious about all things spiritual. So I would love to go to we have a Buddhist temple in town. We have a Baha'i faith. I would probably be exploring some of those. We have a Unitarian Universalist church, which I like kind of their approach to things because they're super duper open-ended. But I am married and I have kids, and we had been raising our kids in this church. So in some sense, it's a compromise and, you know, throwing a bone to my husband to be like, I won't rip the whole rug out from under you and try to change our entire life. So it's a bit of a peace offering for our marriage that I still go. And who knows down the road, you know, again, in a decade, if we're going, or if he still believes, or if I believe again, or who knows. But yeah, because of my church being the way it is, I'm okay going there. And they're teaching us how to be human in a way I still support. You know, I want my kids to have the values and the things that they're teaching, I still think are good values for them to grow up with. So,
I love that.
And what would happen if your kids came to you, or they probably say when they're home from Sunday school or whatever it's called at your church, things about God, when they're throwing God around like that, how does that feel in your own skin? And how do you personally respond to that?
Yeah, we have not like announced to the kids that mommy doesn't believe in God. So they don't really know yet. Again, they're 5 and 7. So I feel like just developmentally getting into that level of nuance and gray zone is too hard to handle. But so I don't like confront them and say like, that's not true. God isn't real, you know, and I'm not a bitter atheist. My leaving wasn't emotional or wasn't from personal trauma. I really just thought my way out. And so I can stay a little bit objective and step back in that sense. And so I use the language that they get it. Oh, I wonder if God is like that. Or I wonder if God did do that. Or,
oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah. And then to be honest, one of your questions was, you know, how do we talk about this with the kids and raise them? Mm-hmm. And I wanted to say, I try to just keep things, and we were doing this even before my husband and I, keeping things really general, because we didn't want to teach them things that they would have to unpack and relearn later. So we don't talk about God a lot at home, and we didn't even before. It's not a regular discussion point as much as we try to talk about gratitude and thinking of others who don't have as much as us, and how can we be good friends, and who are you kind to today? So I think our focus is on the really specific value and behavior side of things without getting into the theology of, well, God wants you to be this way. Like, no, just be this way. Just be kind and be a good person.
That's really brilliant. That just, again, is God, the outside. And I think that was what was happening to me in the car today. I am in training to become a spiritual director, which is for people to find their own path to whatever, the divine in whatever their determination of that is. And I was listening to a book and I thought, they're still going back to this God we have to like make happy, or this God that's outside of us, or the divine that doesn't reside within. And I just keep thinking about what you're saying here and my irritation even there, where it's like, why is it always that there's this other thing out there that we're supposed to be making happy? Like, God wants you to. It's like, how about, do you want to? And just
right. Intrinsic motivation verse.
It's intrinsically good to be kind.
Well, trusting self and knowing self too, right? Like, that's the piece too, where like our religion failed us, honestly. And there's a lot of trauma for a lot of people, but like trusting ourselves, knowing ourselves, what do I want? What do I need? What feels good for me? I mean, all of that kind of stuff is so important. And, you know, we similarly, like in our family, we don't really talk a lot about God, you know, and it's a lot of like, oh, what do you think about that? Or, you know, kind of like what you were saying. And I just think that, again, sometimes religion sort of like clouds these like natural processes and like natural developmental stages, right? Because we're busy talking about hell with a 5-year-old instead of like allowing them to sit in wonder outside in nature.
I've never learned that concept at all.
Right? So yeah. And so we do a disservice, I think, regardless of belief system, regardless if you're, you know what I mean? If you are a devout Christian, if you're an atheist or anywhere in the middle, regardless, like we do a disservice when we blanket like, you know, religion over things and miss out on like just the natural processes of life. Like we try to sort of force answers, right? And we try to sort of force control. And then we actually end up missing some really key natural ways of growth that we have as human beings.
Well, I think also the idea that we can mold our kids so much, like we have very little control when it comes to our kids. Like they are who they are. They're going to grow up and think what they think. So, you know, looking at my parents, they raised me to be a Christian. They're not pleased right now. Like it didn't work out the way, and they did a good job. They were fantastic parents. I love them very much. And yet still now I'm not what they were wanting me to be. And so I think embracing that now, even when they're so young, and realizing like, I am just witnessing their growth and their creation. And I'm here to shepherd and guide, but really like they're going to be who they're going to be. And they're going to have outside influences that I have no control over from school and from, you know, wherever. And so I guess just acknowledging that reality and embracing that they are going to be who they are, no matter what I say or do to some extent can be scary, but also freeing. Like, okay, you know, I'm going to do my best to make sure they know that they're loved and that they have value and that they have something to offer to the world, but aren't obligated to, you know, getting away from that hustle mindset and the capitalistic, you know, production-based thinking, and just try to let them become who they are and trust themselves and all that stuff. So I just kind of focus on that bit. And we do talk about other religions, which I also think is something that I was terrified of as a kid and never came up, but we get them books on, you know, Jewish holidays and on Ramadan and Islam and expose them to other ideas already. And I think that little kids' brains, you know, are so right and wrong, black and white. So that can be a little bit maybe confusing, but I want to lay that groundwork of like, there are a lot of ways to be in this world. And there are a lot of different things people think, and, you know, your grandparents or people at school are so certain and they're one way of thinking, but that's one way. And there's 8 billion people on the planet now. And there's a lot of different ways of doing this thing called life. So trying to lay some of that groundwork, I think, would be good, because I grew up so black and white, and I'm trying to just lay a foundation of gray.
Yeah, a foundation of diversity, options. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There was two of my favorite things that you said was approaching your kids with just that, I wonder if God's, I love the phrase, I wonder, I love that that's your Sunday school or however it is. Mm-hmm. And I think what pressure it takes off us as parents.
Mm-hmm.
When we have little kids or medium kids or big kids, it's like, oh, you have a good point. I wonder if God is like that, or I wonder if the world is like that, or I wonder why that's happening. And there's always the posture of openness instead of the posture of shutting down.
And it gets them to make it their own.
Yeah.
They have to think through that. Now, I'm not just providing an answer and tossing it up. I'm making them sit in it and have to think through it as much as they, you know, 2 seconds, they're going to be distracted and bouncing off to the next toy. But I'm keeping it in their court. So yeah, what do you think? That's a good question.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Learn to trust yourself, right? And like your thoughts and feelings on things matter, and they're valid and they're important. And yeah, I think that's really important. And when someone's thinking for you all the time, right?
Right.
When you're in a religion that's thinking for you all the time, you don't learn to do that. And
yeah,
that's really hard.
The other thing that I noticed that I really want to point out here is you saying something about becoming almost extreme on the other side. Like you don't want to become fundamentalist on the other side where it's like you're allowing not your your agnosticism, your atheist isn't a fundamentalist atheist.
Right.
Now I'm going to get my kids not to believe in God.
Right.
Right. Which I think a lot of people go that way.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I think that that's really important.
Fear on both sides, right? Fear leads you in one, in both directions, instead of wondering and openness and
right. But that comfort of certainty, again, being certain that there's nothing in charge is comforting in a weird way, you know? So living in that gray zone or that in between is a scarier place to be. Yeah. And it's just mentally and emotionally harder, but I think it's more honest. And that's why I kept the agnostic atheist label. I don't want to be certain. I'm not certain. I'm not God, if there is one. I don't know everything. So
I just think that's really brave. It's just brave because it is hard. Uncertainty is hard. And I think in a lot of ways, that's, you know, sort of what Esther and I have chosen for ourselves too. You know, like, I mean, there's a level of sort of like, yes, I'm a Christian. Yes, I believe in God, but I really don't know what the heck is going on. And I'm not going to pretend like I have the answers, you know? Mm-hmm. But being in that place of uncertainty it's freeing in a lot of ways, but it's really hard because as human beings, like, we just want to have an answer. We just want to have a formula. We just want to know. And we're saying, like, we don't know. Mm-hmm. And you don't know. And we're learning from each other. And it's just, that's hard.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So if you were sitting at the table with your kids and you did want to send them an overarching message about life, I'm not even going to say our usual question is about God, faith, and themselves.
Uh-huh.
Let's just say, what is the overarching message that you would want for them to know at the core of their soul?
I would say the fact of our existence is bananas. The fact that the universe is even here with or without God, you know, if it's the Big Bang, well, what set off the Big Bang and what was happening before? If it's God, well, what made God? Where did the most powerful complex being come from before anything else existed? None of it makes sense when you go far enough back. The fact that we're here is a miracle. I still think that's an appropriate word to use. And so enjoy your life. You are gifted with consciousness. You're gifted with the self. Enjoy your life. Enjoy the passage of time and try to make the most of it. We get this opportunity to be alive and I don't know what comes next. So make the most of this moment and this life you have and try to live authentically to embrace that and be true to yourself and kind of live life to the fullest, which is kind of cliche, but I feel like that's the only guarantee I can give them is the present moment right now. I don't know what the future holds. I don't know what's coming, but you're alive now and that's beautiful. And we happen to be very privileged being middle-class white people. So we have a lot of opportunities. So embrace that and try to look around and see you can help along the way.
Yeah.
The thing that came to my mind, which now you flipped it on its head, is eat, drink, and be merry.
Oh,
I mean, like, you flipped that phrase on its head for me today. You know, it's really about being present. That eat, drink, and be merry is really about presence of being in today. So it's funny how things can get redeemed. I've always thought of that as a wrong statement. And now I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah,
that might be my new mantra.
But again, right, like when you're in a high control religion, like being in the present moment and just like enjoying what's around, like that's not a thing. Like you're not really supposed to do that. So like no one's really living. Like no one's actually really living. No one's in the present. No one's, I mean, it's such an anxiety filled way of being.
Oh, I was tortured for decades, tortured with, am I doing enough? Am I pleasing God? Am I a sheep or a goat?
Yep.
That passage terrified the shit out of me. How do I know I'm not a goat? I've never been to prison. I haven't visited one prisoner in my life. I fed some homeless people. Is that enough? You know, like, how do I know? That constant questioning, maybe my salvation's guaranteed, but how do I know if I'm going to get there and God will say, get away, I never knew you.
Yeah.
That was scary. And it gave me such a hustle complex, really. It's like that never rest. It's never enough. What do you have to offer? What can you give of yourself? What can you do? And it didn't just let me be and didn't just let me live and be in the moment because I was always worried that I'm not doing enough. My faith isn't extreme enough. I don't give away enough money. I don't live simply enough. All the things that I valued in my faith, which are not what other Christians even value. You know, the prosperity gospel Christians aren't wondering those same things. There's so many flavors of Christianity. But yeah, my husband and I both have that kind of savior complex where it's just always, I don't know if I'm doing enough to be a good Christian, a good person. And that I still wrestle with as just now as a human. It's hard to rest in the now and just let myself exist and realize I'm allowed to just be here. I don't have to produce and give.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, I want to. I want to help people's lives be better if I can. So nuance. Yeah.
Right. So it's like you can, but you don't have to. I think there is like a huge, that is a huge relief to be able to say like, I can help others. Right. But I could just not do anything. The thing that I like to say to myself, especially when I'm in times of, you know, just like real mental health struggle, or I feel like I'm just really not producing, is just like, if all I did for the rest of my life was sit on the couch and not move, that would be enough and okay. You know,
and it's allowed. Yeah.
It's allowed. Right. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't think I started saying that to myself until probably like 3 years ago. I would have never said that to myself like 10 mm-hmm. years ago at a, you know, Christian college and just like checking all the boxes. I never would have said right. that, like, oh, sitting on the couch is enough. How dare you? You know, whatever. But yeah, there's a lot of freedom to heal when you start asking, I wonder, instead of, you know, I know.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, my gosh. That's so good. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. Well, if people want to read your book or follow you, mm-hmm. I don't know if you're on social media. Can you just say the name of your book really loudly again?
Yes. Yes. My book is called Giving Up God, Resurrecting a Spirituality of Love and Wonder. And it's available everywhere books are sold. There's a link to it on my website, which is just my full name, sarahhenhayward.com. Hen, as I used to say as a kid, like the animal, but two N's. Mm-hmm. So my website has the book info. I've also actually written a couple children's books with plans to write more. So that is on the website. I have a link to all the podcasts I've been on, and I write articles now for a interfaith and non-faith religious news publication that's local to the Pacific Northwest. So I put my essays that I write for them on there. So the website has a lot of information. And then I'm active on Instagram predominantly at S Hayward Writes.
Perfect.
That's great. Thank you so much for being here and just being willing to be really honest with us about your journey and the things that have been really great and the things that have been really hard. I think that's the best gift that we can really give to ourselves and each other, is just to be vulnerable about, mm-hmm. you know, just how life is and how it works and how much we don't know. And you know, the beautiful things and the hard things.
Life is hard. So if we can learn from each other, that's great.
Right. And just admit that it's hard, right? If we're all just like, geez, this is, like you said, this is all bananas. Yeah. It's all bananas if we can just agree on that.
Well, and I just think, like, at the end of the day, the truth really is we are all agnostic. Mm-hmm. Like, we mm-hmm. all don't know anything for sure. Mm-hmm. We can want to know things, but I'm like, I guess I am kind of agnostic. I mean, there's certain things I know that I want to know or feel in my soul, mm-hmm. but we probably have much more in common than we don't. So maybe
we're agnostic Christians, Esther. Are we agnostic Christians or Christian agnostics? Or
agnostics who follow the teachings of Jesus and the person of Jesus.
I do. In the book, I wrestle with several different labels to call myself. And one is the Christian atheist label of like, I still want my version of Christianity that I had, but without having to necessarily think God is real. There's room for it all. Yeah, we can do what we want.
Yeah, I think there is. I think there's room for it all. And when we give ourselves permission to just have our journey,
right?
You know, that's really freeing and healing.
Right. I wonder. Mm-hmm. Good mm-hmm. ending. Thank you.
Yes. Thanks, you guys. This is great.
Well, that's it for this episode of the Deconstructing Mamas podcast. We love that you tuned in and hope that this gave you a little bit of grace and space for your soul to breathe.
Don't forget to catch up on any of our episodes that you missed. And remember to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Deconstructing Mamas.
That's where you'll find all the information that you need about the podcast, as well as on our website, deconstructingmamas.com. You can also sign up for our weekly newsletter when you get there.
If you'd like to support the podcast, join our Patreon network for just $3 a month. And have access to our private community with all kinds of extras. Leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts, or just tell others about the show.
Thanks for listening, and come back again for our next episode. We can't wait to be on the other side of your headphones.